two young fathers are shot to death outside an iconic Utah restaurant.
I said, your dad has been hurt really bad.
The grief was disorienting for those left behind, until one choice changed everything.
I just remember writing this letter, and it wasn't me writing it.
Can a personal decision shape generations?
We're all falling for this guy's trick.
I'm Amy Donaldson. Season 2 of The Letter, Ripple Effect, is available now. Follow us at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Lemonada.
Wake up, wake up.
Hey.
Wake up, wake up.
Hey.
I said, wake up, wake up. You're listening to Mouthpiece with Michael Bennett
and Pele Bennett. Thank you for all the love you guys have shared on our new show that launched last week. If you haven't had a chance to check out that episode, Crockpot Love, please check that out either before or after you listen to today's episode. That episode was a lot of fun, a lot of laughs, and it's also a good way to get to know us and our relationship better.
Before we dig into the topic of today, we want to let you know what's coming up to honor Black History Month. Over the next few episodes, we got a whole range of guests who are going to help us to think about Black history from all types of perspectives. From culture, redemption, to religion, and so much more.
Next week, we're joined by the great John Carlos, where we're going to talk about his stand at the 1968 Olympics, where he endured adversity, but also persevered and came back out on top.
And after that, we have Freeway Ricky Ross, not the Rick Ross from Maybach Music, more of the Rick Ross who was the drug kingpin. And we get a chance to talk about a story of redemption and a story of struggle.
For the final week of Black American History Month, we're going to be joined by Dr. Eddie Glaude. He's the chair of the African American Studies Department at Princeton University, where we're going to talk about race, we're going to talk about culture, and we're going to talk about the role of the Black church in today's society.
So please tune in during Black History Month as we take a deep dive into African American history, as we have deep conversations, and we have a lot of self-reflection. And today, we're talking about retirement. My whole thing is that I feel like I'm beat up. Not like I'm beat up, like, just physically, but, like, I'm just tired of doing the same thing for, like, so long. I've been playing football for, what, 20-something years. Like, it's always been the same regimen. You beat yourself up to get healthy, to beat yourself back up again. And at what point is it worth it? Like, I've been to Super Bowl. I've been Pro Bowls. I did everything in the NFL you could possibly do. And now I'm just like, okay, like, it's been fun, but I feel like there's like another side of something that I need to tap into. And I feel like I feel like my kids are growing, my wife is growing, everything is growing, and I feel good. And it's like a great time to walk away. I don't want to be the boxer who's been punched drunk. You know, when I look at Muhammad Ali or some of the greatest people, like, they played until they couldn't think anymore. And it's like, why do I want to wait to that point? And I know you don't think that I'm going to retire.
So no, like, I don't.
And why is that?
That could be a whole little contest we do if Michael retires from.
But tell the reason why, though.
So I don't think Michael retired because he genuinely loves football. You are passionate about football. You are educated in football. Like, you know your stats. You know the history. Like, you literally love football. So for you to sit here and tell me that you're going to retire, I have to see it to believe it.
I mean, you won't know until the end until that happens. But I feel like at every point, we all have to know the shelf life on certain things. Like, there are certain things that are in life that has a shelf life. And this is one of those things. Like, there's a point where I've seen so many people get injured, and I've seen so many people. I'm like, I'm blessed. Like, I've been blessed to do it at a high level for a long period of time. But it's like, what else can I be good at? Like, I feel like a lot of times, and no offense to players, but I feel like people just stay in it because they're scared to, like, venture off into something else that might have a little bit of failure, a little bit of growth. Like, they feel like they grew in this thing this much. Why would they want to experience anything else? Because when you experience everything else, you have those ups and downs. And, like, we had the ups and downs within sports, but we had a team, we had a coach, we had people we could talk to when those ups and downs. Now we're going into life where it's ups and downs, and you have to depend on the people, your family, you have to depend on other people who are not paid to be there for you. It's like people that are just your family. And I think that's the thing that I feel like is different.
But another thing with you retiring from football is that as a family, we are retiring from football. So it's kind of funny when people ask me, oh, are you ready for Michael to retire? For me, if you were to keep playing, I think about it as far as myself as well. I don't only think of you retiring. I think of, okay, the kids are retiring. I'm retiring. Like, our family, how we function during, you know, football these years has been around football. So, like, football also is, like, a very selfish sport. But it has ups and downs. I'm not going to say, like, a negative way. But I'm saying that it is a selfish sport as everything revolves around it.
Yeah.
And that's off-season as well. And so I think, like, when you're retiring, I'm retiring. The kids are retiring. So how does that lifestyle look when we leave this life?
That's the thing about it. It's the unknown. It's the fear of it. But also, I feel like you are a great person. And I feel like my family's great. I feel like together, like, as long as we're together, we're able to experience those ups and downs together and be able to depend on each other in a new way. And it's just us. It's just me and you. This pretty face that you have to live with.
He's talking about himself.
Yeah, I'm talking about you. Have a pretty face.
You're talking about yourself.
But I'm saying this pretty face is what you have to live with. And am I scared? Of course I'm scared. I'm always scared a little bit of, like, the unknown. I would be a coward if I got on this podcast and was like, oh, I'm not scared. But there's points of where I get scared too. I'm not unsure. I don't know how I'm going to feel, if I'm going to be able, like, I have to retrain myself. I have to redo things. I have to go see a counselor. I have to do a whole bunch of new things that I've never done before, but I'm okay with that.
Did you say go see a counselor?
Yeah, I should see a counselor.
I think that's a great idea.
I do. I think everybody, I talked to a couple of my friends and they all said that they saw a counselor.
I also do feel that it also, needing a counselor, I think, is amazing, because I do feel like there's things that, you know, you need to discuss that you can't do with certain people. And I do feel also that having a counselor and having someone to speak to, you know, so you can articulate your feelings is really important.
My thing about seeing a counselor is not so much about walking away from the sport. It's really about pain. Like, how do I get ready for a life of pain?
Pain as in mental or physical?
No, physical pain. Like, how do I deal with that? Like, there's going to be things that, like, now that I'm young, they feel good. But, like, I know that one day my hip is going to hurt. Or I know that my...
So is that kind of a form of you being selfish? If you continue, like, if you say after this year, I'm still going to keep playing. I always tell you it's, like, about your health and wellness. Like, I would never just say, if you're able, I would never say, oh, don't stop playing. But if I'm seeing that, like, you know, like you're saying, physically, you're going to be in pain. Mentally, there's other things that go with it, then hell yeah, I'm going to be like, you know, stop. You can't. That's where the selfishness comes into play, because as a wife or the children, like, they're not only looking to you as, like, a fan would, like, on the field, they're living with you. You know, they're seeing you on it every day in those struggles that, you know,
and that's
happen
what happens. I feel like sometimes you are trying to do something so selfish that it becomes selfish. And I think at this point, I was like, oh, I want to provide for my family. I want to be able to create these, all these different things. And then all of a sudden it becomes selfish, because now the things that I've thought that were super important and I achieved those things, and now I'm going to injure myself, and it becomes selfish because now you have to deal with a broken husband. The kids have to deal with a broken father. So I have to think about those things when they're weighing them out. And it's hard, but at the same time, also retrain yourself about pain. Like, you play in the sport for so long. I talk to guys and they're like, I forgot that this is not normal. Like, mm-hmm. You know, like they say, like, well, I'm not used to not having my foot hurt. Like,
So what about this? Is it selfish if your partner were to tell you it's time to stop?
I don't think that's selfish. I think every person that's involved in a situation can have their opinion about it. But like you said, at the end of the day, like, if a person forces somebody to do something that they're uncomfortable with, they're going to rebel. So it's like, mm-hmm. You can say what you want to say, but at the end of the day, you got to be able to allow them to grow. And the thing for me personally, I want you to be patient with me as I retire, and I want to be patient with you as we transition, because
pray for us.
I feel like if we're not patient with each other, like, there's going to be ups and downs or moments where I feel like that I might not be as strong as I used to be, or as far as not physically, but mentally, I might be like, there's points where I feel like I might be breaking down.
You know what? Now that you're saying that, how I'm thinking of this, it's almost like a death.
Yeah, it is a death.
Like, retirement is like a death. And the hard part with relationships moving forward is the mourning process. And everyone mourns deaths differently. So your mourning is going to be different from mine. And so that's where it's going to be, where we're really going to have to stay on the same page and see how we work through all of that.
Today in studio, we have retired NFL safety, DeJuan Landry, his wife, Dominique Lee Fawn Landry, and his arms. Yes, I said his arms. They're officially 50-inch biceps. We wanted to bring them on the show because they're on the other side of the NFL, The side that I shall walk along with Pelé across that finishing line, on that side is called retirement. Duane was one of the hardest hitting safeties in the league for the Ravens and the Jaguars and, of course, the Jets. Dom is doing her own thing, a mother extraordinaire and also a businesswoman. They might be us in a few years, so we need time to process the idea of retirement. Who better to ask than Duane and Dominique Lee Fong Landry? So today, I welcome, yes, Dom and Duane. So first question, Dom, I need you to answer this question. How do you find shirts that fit your husband for his arms? I'm really not really worried about the t-shirts. I'm kind of thinking about the dress shirts. Do you have the dress shirts altered with sheets on the arms, or what do you do?
Yeah. Usually I use curtains or bed sheets. It's pretty tough to dress this guy.
I want to start off with a real question. What was it like being married in the NFL, having the relationship? Did you have fears of having a broken man after the game as far as injuries and dealing with depression? And how did you overcome the highs and lows of being in the NFL?
That's probably a loaded question, very multifaceted answer.
That's what we want. We want the juice. We want the facts. We don't want, you know.
I think generally speaking, so the first portion of that is, was I afraid I'd have a broken man at the end of this? And I think the answer to that is yes. He suffered a season-ending injury his second year in, and I was there for that third year in.
Yes.
He got his spinal cord tapped and went limp at the game and was out for the season. And his recovery time and having to go through surgeries and the pain he was in, I just was like, it's not worth it. We both graduated from college. I have a good job. You don't have to do this. We don't have to do this. We can call it quits. You made it to the NFL. That was your dream. And so it can be over now and we'd be great. But at the same time, he hadn't accomplished what he wanted to accomplish. And trying to be supportive of that and supportive of his dream, I think, is just a tough challenge. But I'm glad he was able to bounce back and have a wonderful career after that. But I think the fear is still that with the NFL, you don't quite know until you know. And so he's happy and healthy now, and I'm going to pray and I'm just going to speak into existence that that will be continued. But I think it's also true that we've seen many stories where you're happy and healthy 1 minute and then it's not the second minute. And so I think it's going to be probably a present fear, given that he played football since he was, what, six and had so many hits and would never come out the game and was never kind of a person that protected himself or his body. So I think it's just a present fear that's ongoing.
No, I feel that too.
I think that's like everybody, even for me personally, I always felt like if you're in the game, should you come out? But it's like the competitor you as an athlete to never come out or to let down your team. But then as you get older in the league, you realize that it's not just the team that's on the field. It's really the team that's your family that's going to be there for a while. So I think
right.
That's the scary part that's for each athlete. And I see Aisha Curry when her husband fall. I'd be like, why are you crying? He just fell.
It's NFL. Just a fall for basketball. Yeah. See the real hits. You can tell your husband has been concussed and he's still in the game getting his teammates to cover him for him for a couple plays. Like, that's the real that you have to deal with. And, you know, I think especially as more and more information is coming out on it, you're kind of like, ah, man.
Yeah, like, you have more concern over it. Or you start noticing things.
More concerned. Exactly. And it's simple things where you're just trying to figure out, like, is this normal? Where I'm like, I told you that yesterday. You don't remember that conversation? Do you remember? Do you, you know? Where it's just like, you're just looking out for things. You're just like, okay, is that a sign of CT or is that normal? You know, like, So it's like you're becoming an internet detective trying to figure out, okay, is this normal or
no, exactly.
What's going on?
So me and Michael, we've been together since high school. Can you guys tell me how you guys met? I want to hear the sweet story.
Let's hear it.
Nah, because you're not going to like the story I'm going to tell.
Well, I want to hear it.
I
want to hear it.
They waiting on you.
It would be just like on the episode of Martin when he first saw Gina and she just ran into his arms. That's how my story would go.
Yep. Let's hear it. Don't
damn,
worry.
Run it, dear.
No. I want to hear your side of the story.
So I went to Spelman College and I cheered for Morehouse College. And him and his Georgia Tech teammates would always come looking for the cute girls at Spelman. Is that not what it was?
That's not what it was.
Oh, okay. Do you, You want me to continue, or you want to continue? So he and his roommates were at a game that we were cheering at, and one of his roommates actually saw one of my best friends in college and went and talked to her and invited a bunch of us over to their dorm room to, I think we ended up playing Taboo that night.
Yeah, we were playing one game.
And it was hilarious. And he was the cutest one there. So,
great answer.
Compliment.
That was the end of that.
Great answer.
True answer too, though.
Oh, thank you.
But is it funny though? Because sometimes I'll tell Pelly this: when you're looking at somebody and you start to date them, do you really realize that that person is going to be a part of your life forever? Like Dom and Duan, did you realize that like this is going to be the mother of your kids within that second, or was it more like we built up to that point?
I think we built up to that point.
It was not a at first sight kind of situation. No. And he was really quiet, and that wasn't really my type.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And he would hardly talk. I couldn't understand his accent.
That's what it was. I still don't understand
sometimes.
Duan, I wanted to ask you, because Martellus played in the league and he went first. And so every time someone finds out Michael plays or they know of him, they always ask about Martellus. So I didn't know that you had a brother playing also. So how was that dynamic growing up playing for you and then professionally and then also with your family?
It was definitely a blessing. My brother, I came out in 06. My brother came in 07. And, you know, I'm kind of the brother who was always under the radar. My brother, he's a big draw. He's an in-state guy. He went to college in Louisiana. So every time I come home, you know, I went to Georgia Tech for college. I'm kind of the brother I'm just LeRon's brother, so to say. So, and it's kind of cool for me. You know, I'm a low key guy. None of that ever bothered me, but it was more of a blessing, for my family and I being so close my first couple of years when I was in Baltimore and my brother, he was in Washington. So for 5 years, I would pretty much see my parents pretty much every week during the season because the way the schedule was set up, when I was home, they would be on the road. So my parents just pretty much switched up each week coming to home games. And that was pretty much a pretty cool factor. And my parents were blessed to watch all of our games. They were always at our games from childhood until now. You know, they're always in our lives. And that's been a blessing.
But this is a question for both of y'all. I'm going to read something to you guys. The average career is 3 years. 78% of all people go broke 2 years after retirement. 65% of all players leave the game permanently injured. So the real conversation that I want to have to you is really kind of a race question, too, because it's based around money. And you and your brother were both in the NFL. And how did you guys have that conversation with money with your family about, look, this is our money. We can't afford to. We could do simple things that require us if we feel like we have extra income to give you guys or do something for you. But we can't be the crutch to hold your family up when we're trying to be the pillar to hold the roof of our own home up. So how do you continuously have that conversation between you as a couple and then having with your family?
For my family, my parents, they never asked us for anything.
Oh,
you
that's
know,
nice.
They're just, yeah, it's been truly a blessing, man, to be honest, man. And, you know, my dad, he's worked for 35 years. He retired maybe about 10, 15 years ago. My mama, she recently retired maybe about 5 years ago. Even still, you know, they're humble people. Everyday people, and they would never ask us for money. So it was always a blessing. You would always get outside family, like distant cousins or things like that. You might get them to want to ask a couple of dollars here and there. And I would definitely, talk to my mom, because I know my mom's not going to hold any punch. She'd tell them no in a heartbeat. And that's been a blessing for us, to be honest.
So Dom, let me ask you within that same question, do you feel that it's mostly African-American people who are in these leagues when it comes to money? Do you feel like it's a conversation about how to maintain the money or the wealth, even if it's not family? How do you feel about the conversation of money with younger African-American athletes?
I think it's kind of unfortunate that the colleges aren't mandated to teach financial wealth and financial resources to college players, because you got to think, you're giving a young man who may not come from money, tons of it, you know, 19, 20, 21, right, coming into hundreds of thousands of dollars, who do have a family history of people that are in need. And then oftentimes, I think just the mindset is to take care of your family, which is not a negative mindset. But I do think there's a certain ways you can do that, where I've had players that have like 20 people's cell phones on their bill and, you know, have a house and house here and house there. And I just feel like on some level, if the colleges were preparing them for a world after, you know, they would be thinking about investments and what that looks like, you know, giving them like what to not look for in terms of money managers that are stealing your money and lawyers. Because I think there's a piece of it where it's like making sure that we're pushing the knowledge of it. But there's also like an aspect of it of so many people coming in and being taken advantage of because they do not have that knowledge and they don't have those resources and they don't have the right people looking at their money. So I think there's a double whammy in terms of just people consistently seeing these young players that don't know and taking advantage of them from both ends. And I feel like on some level, given that colleges make billions of dollars off of athletes, you know, a portion of that blame can come from them not equipping them properly.
Well, we have a complete opposite story from financially.
People ask for money all the time. But I do feel like you almost feel sometimes when you're an athlete and you reach a certain pinnacle of success, you can feel a little guilt when you look back and you see some of your family members not doing as good as you. So sometimes that guilt factor Definitely. Can guilt trip you into wanting to do more than you really have to do. But you feel like it's almost like you're not keeping it real. And I think that sometimes as an athlete, like, you got to keep it real. Keeping it real, if you watch Dave Chappelle, that shit always got you in trouble. keeping it real, get your shot, get you broke. It's just not.
Exactly.
Just not.
Right. And the thing is, like, I think people forget that the money you guys make in a short amount of time has to last you for your lifetime. So most careers have the opposite effect where you come in at the low range and then you get to work your way up. You get to work until you're 65. You can build your retirement. You can have insurance for all those years. You can have all those things. And for football players and athletes, it's the opposite. You start at the top and then you decline. So whatever you make then is what has to last you for a long time. And if you're not smart about your investments, you're not smart about like where you're using your money, if you're not smart about saying no, you're going to be broke and there's going to be no one that can help you.
Like the power of no.
I know.
It's so hard, but at the same time, it's easy, boundaries. But it's so
it's
hard.
Boundaries because we support, you know, like, but we have a limit. So, you know, and right. none of our parents, none of our like siblings are like hounding us for money. Yeah. And I think those would be the only people we'd feel more inclined to do. True. So everyone else, we're like, okay, this is our set. This is what we're giving to like, you know, foundations or whoever, right. You know, like whatever it is. And when that runs dry, it's a hard no.
It's hard a hard, pass. Hard no.
You so gotta... Who's better at saying no? Which one of y'all?
Definitely down.
Me. I shut everything down.
You gotta be.
Can I call you?
You gotta be like Martin.
Yes, you can send them to me. Be like,
you have
hey,
to go through Dom.
Just dial them in and say, I'm like, hey, this is Pele's speaker. No.
And you know when people want to ask for money, they'll send you a text message and be like, oh.
You know it.
Yeah, I got to call you. Mm-hmm. No, text me. Text me what you've been texting me.
No, text me. Yeah. Text it right
call
now.
Me. I
got to
ask you something. Yeah. Or they'll, I'm not calling back.
Or yet. They'll call first, and then when you don't pick up, they'll be like, call me back. You'll be like, why? Just say it in text.
Yeah, just say what you
so
want.
I can hit you
I'll
with
still
this.
Get it. I'll still get it.
Good.
And then when if you go broke.
I'll hit you with that.
No, they're going to be like, Martin, don't you know no good? They're going to be like,
yeah. Talking like, about what? You, like how you squandered your money away.
You dumbass.
Gave you all my money.
He made all those millions. Look at him now. He broke.
Stay with us. I got to take a shit. I'll be right back. More and more after this break.
Hi there, it's Julia Louis-Dreyfus. You may know me from my podcast called Wiser Than Me, where I talk to older women and get their wisdom from the front lines of life. After season one aired, I was amazed by how many people told me our show made them look forward to getting older, which is why I'm here to talk about season two of the show. Sally Field, Billie Jean King, Beverly Johnson, Ina Garten, Bonnie Raitt, just to name a few. And of course, my 90-year-old mom, Judy. All hail old women. Wiser Than Me Season 2 is out now from Lemonada Media.
Welcome to The Dough, where cash is queen and we hardly know her, but we're still here figuring her out together because, y'all, Season 2 is here. Hosted every week by me, X Maya. Remember me? I'm going to be talking to all types of people about their relationship to money. I'm talking to reality stars, entrepreneurs, financial experts, and even some of my own friends. Basically, anyone who will get real with me about their dollars, how they make money, how they spend it, and how they save it, because I'm trying to retire early, people. Season 2 of The Dough is out now, wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back.
I wanted to ask you a question, Dom, actually. And so, like, I know during, like, in the NFL, as a player, it's so much attention. It's so many things pulling at them. And I feel like sometimes the women, they kind of get lost within that. I'm not saying everyone, but sometimes as a wife, you kind of get lost within all of that. And so I just want to know, was it difficult to keep your identity or find your identity through your career in the NFL?
No, not really, because I think DeWanda is a great example of leading the way and being humble. And so I think we're kind of equally yoked in the fact that we did not really take it too seriously. Like, it was his job. It was a way to provide for our family. I worked up on in my career all the way, and I was in educational nonprofit for up until I had my son, and I literally, like, delivered him and then sent my, like, my exiting email, like, oop, Landon came early. Like, this is what you guys need to do. So, like, we were both, I think, very grounded and didn't take it too seriously. Like, we wouldn't even tell people. If people would see him, they'd be like, oh, are you? And they'd be like, no, that's not me, you know?
Right.
I would never tell people that my husband played football. You would pretty much have to pry it out of me. I guess I felt like I was the star of the family. Saying, so. Yeah.
You would really have to.
I'm like, what do you know? Who cares if he plays football? Right. Did you see? You know,
right.
Look at what we're doing over here. So I think we didn't take it seriously, and I think that helped us both during the time and then also during the transition because, mm-hmm. you know, it was just like, okay, next step.
Wait, did you guys have kids while y'all were before or after, or in between?
At the end, right?
Oh, okay.
Our last 2 years.
Yeah.
So did that change the dynamic of the relationship within the career?
I looked at the game a little different after that. I had a much more respect for the guys who had kids while they played because I knew it was like a full-time job. Going to practice games, come home, got to play with your kids. And for me, it was always come home, study film, prepare, workout, things like that. And then when you have kids, like, whoa, I got to... another aspect of my life now. And you look at the game, you know, you always going wall to wall in the game. But when you have the kids, like, man, I don't know if I should be not going as hard, but I'm like, I got more to live for after the game.
Yeah, no, I wasn't enough to live for before.
We've had this discussion and you got mad at me.
I get it.
I get it, man. No, I get what you're saying, though, because it's like when you have kids, it's like when you first lay your eyes on the child that you and your wife created, it just becomes like this whole other world because it's like you guys were individuals and then it becomes a true team when you have to really raise this child and you guys are responsible for him. And at the end of the day, every time you leave the house, it's like you just want to get home and think you're really thinking about their future. And like, dang, if I'm not there, then how are they going to turn out? So I feel like it's hard for me to imagine being a father and Pele being a mother. Like, how do people walk away from that experience? And the NFL just becomes harder because you have so many time constraints. But I think it's a blessing, you know. Sometimes when Pele's like, do you want the kids to come to the game? I'm like, hell yeah, I want the kids to come to the game. I want them to see what their daddy been through.
And I'm like, damn.
Serious bruises.
Okay, I'll only have one glass of wine.
Exactly.
When I think about retiring, so I'm not saying that I don't think I'll be depressed. I think it'll be awesome. But I do have the fear of the idle time and the fear of not knowing you walk into something new. But in your relationship, how did you guys rekindle or reinvent your relationship when you started to have more time? Did you find it refreshing to really get to know each other over, or did you find that it was harder to rekindle everything?
You want me to go first?
You definitely go first.
I think it was a difficult transition. I really did.
Why is that?
Because...
My bad.
I tell people all the time, I say, I don't think we were made to see each other like as much as we are.
Mm-hmm.
That's hard for me. It's still hard for me where I'm like, oh my goodness. Like, what football did bring was like a lot of individual space and time. Mm-hmm. So he would be away, you know, for games and or away training and doing all those things. And I think my personality, I just like alone time sometimes. Right. So if you add on the fact that he's home all the time, we have additional kids. It's just, it is like, it's rough on me.
On you.
On me. I think he's living his best life. But me, personally, I'm struggling.
And for me, it was total opposite. You know, I'm
a homebody.
Yeah, I'm a homebody anyway. So, you know, just me being home, being around the kids, being around her, it was never nothing changed for me, so to say. I still work out all the time.
All day.
Yeah, all,
all day.
30 minutes.
No, he's there for like 5 hours Stop. A day.
Don't put my business
Hence
in the street.
The arms. They look good though, babe. Yeah. They look good.
But, you know, just being around the family, I enjoy it, but I can see what she's saying because the kids are, you know, even when they're younger, they're real clingy to you.
Yeah.
It's like, I can't even go into the bathroom or something like that. The kids are always looking for her. And then if I'm looking for her, you know,
they
like,
all, this, they just all give me some space a little bit. They're always looking for me. Right. All of them. All three of them.
That's true.
Just you. You're like your dad is sitting right there on the couch.
Exactly. But he's looking for me, too. So it's literally like, oh, and I say all of them. All of them. And I'm just trying to hide sometimes. I literally am like literally try to hide sometimes. Mm-hmm. And they always find me. Always.
No, at bedtime, I tell everyone, including Michael, sometimes I'm clocking out. I'm off duty. Nobody say my name. Nobody call me. Don't even say mom. Sometimes the kids, I'm like, just call me by my name because I can't hear the word mom anymore.
I don't want to hear anymore. And then at nighttime, like, you know, once you get the kids to sleep, I'm just like, you know, and like, I'm like decompressing from the day. I usually try to do a little bit of work for my business and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And he's like, you're not going to sit down and watch TV with me. And this. And I'm like, I don't even want to be around you. I just want to go to the back and be by myself and eat by myself and watch whatever kind of show I want to watch and just like be alone.
You need your alone time.
I do.
But if he said that, how would you feel if he came home and was like, I want some alone time. I think I'm going to go to Paris for a week. I'll be back next week.
I would be.
You gonna say
have
take the kids.
At it. Take the kids.
Oh Lord, he's going on a trip now.
He won't. He's not. He won't.
Right, I'm not taking the kids.
Deal breaker.
I would feel just fine, but he gets his alone time, and I think that's the difference.
Yeah.
Michael's alone time is with me, so my alone time is alone.
It's alone.
No, but I get it. When you have so many things going on during the day, you do need that little bit of serenity wherever it is, but you just need that. And I think it's okay to say that. You know, it's okay to communicate that I need a little bit of alone time. It's not neglecting the family, you or your needs or whoever. You need it for yourself.
Real talk, though, DeJuan. I mean, what is it really like for retired players? Like, as far as, like, if people who are listening to this podcast and guys are really want to know, and they have a fear of being retired, they have a fear of not knowing if they're going to fall in love, if the kids are going to like them. What advice would you give? How did you feel? What was going on through your mind as you chose to walk away from the game?
Walking away from the game was easy for me because, you know, I knew I had my two little ones and I was ready for that chapter of my life. And, you know, I'm not going to say I'm the best parent because my son, he tries me every day and I'm a work in progress with him. And but it's been beautiful to see them grow, and I'm growing better as a dad each and every day, and just trying to be the best role model for them each and every day. So that's what keeps me going and has me just motivated to just put the football behind me. You know, football is what I did. It's not who I am.
Mm.
I enjoyed it, and I can see my son. He loves sports, so I'm kind of living through him now. I don't know if my wife wants him to play football or not. She says she doesn't, but you know, whatever he puts his mind to, I just want him to be supportive.
But that's funny because one of our questions we have for you guys is, would you let your kids play football or soccer or other sports they have concussions in them? And Dom, is the one of the reasons why you don't want your son playing sports is because of the issues of injury, or is it just you don't want him playing sports because he's not a good team player?
Oh, he's not a good team player. So there's that.
Right.
He is a total narcissist. he's competitive to a fault, and he gets it from both of us. So he got double the blessing of competitiveness. And so he's not quite at that team player level, but I know he will get there. We are working on it very hard. I don't want him to play football specifically. It's not really all sports. It's more specifically football. I think there's a political aspect to that. And I think there's also a physical and like just mental aspect to that. I think by and large, on many levels, the NFL shows that it may not care about the players as persons as they should. And I think it comes in the way that, you know, there's issues with pension plans for older players now that played back in the day, didn't make a lot of salary and are literally struggling to get money and not having like, the right insurance for them. And it's like, you know, all the issues of, you know, them possibly hiding the information about concussions and things of that nature. So I think there's just a lot of things that have come up concurrently that shows us that, you know, when you think about like truly caring for people and thinking about these people that they have families and kids, then you should do better. You should at least be sharing more of the knowledge, and you should be thinking about long term what it means for the people that have been giving their lives to, you know, make you billions of dollars. Like, what does lifelong, you know, health and happiness look like for them? And they're not doing that.
Do you miss things about the NFL? And did the politics really affect you as you became an older player?
It did, definitely. So me missing the game, I missed the locker room, you know, just interacting with the guys. Being a competitor, you always miss the game, just competing at the highest level. But the day in and day out stuff, just talking to your brothers, walking in to the locker room, just, you know, having a fun, whether it's playing cornhole, shooting dice, whatever it was you guys did, you know, that's what you missed the most for me. I kind of fell out of love with the game at the end of my my career, because, you know, as you get older, you're going to get the younger guys. We drafted a first round safety my second year in with the Jets. And, you know, when the team's not doing well and the younger guy wasn't playing, you got to put the young guy in. And politics like that. So that was kind of a easy way for me to like look at it as we asked time for me to leave.
But and you know, what's interesting about you guys too, I thought was really interesting, is you guys come from different cultures. Pele Samoa and we had a blended family. I know you from Louisiana, you know, I'm from Louisiana too, you know. Louisiana is like its own little thing, you know. And so
you're from Louisiana?
Yeah, I'm from
what part?
A town called Amit, Louisiana. Small town.
Amit? Yeah. Okay. Yep. So familiar with it.
Yeah. So, and you know, we got our own slang. We got our own food. And having two different cultures, how is that like growing up in blended family? And did you find, you know, being an African-American man or African-American descent, there's not so many cultural things that we can take from the past. But I feel like when you have somebody who's from a different culture, they have so many things from the past that you kind of look at like, oh, that's kind of neat to have that. It kind of gives them like their own, you know, path to their ancestors. Do you enjoy having a wife who has a different culture?
I definitely do, man. You know, her grandfather is Chinese, so totally different background. But, you know, just being around her parents.
Well, my parents, we're West Indian, so I don't even really... It's mostly just the Jamaicans.
The Jamaican, yeah.
My parents, I'm a first generation American. So my parents are Jamaicans on all sides of my family, both mother and father. So it's always a vibrant time. Lots of dancing, lots of rum, and really, really good food. And so I think we can connect on that because of him being from Louisiana. You know, they like to have a good time, too. They got
everybody's
good food.
Easy going.
Everybody's chill.
Everybody gets along really well.
So the wedding was fun because that was the time to kind of bring both cultures together, both in food and in music. Mm-hmm. So that was fun.
So now that you guys are out transitioning, what do you both do professionally?
I have, we both have our own fitness businesses. Mm-hmm. I do personal training, online coaching, and corporate wellness. And then he has a strength coaching business. I'm fitenough.com, and then he is 26Fit.
Look, I'm like, sign me up.
Yeah, come through, Pele.
I need that. You said online. Everything is online now. I'm like, it's so much easier.
Yeah.
Okay, so... As we wrap up, we like to have this little game we call a little 30-second question. And so it's like Pele says, do you like computers or iPads? You say iPads, and you can give your reason why.
Okay.
Go ahead. First question, Pele.
All right. This is personal. Morning or night sex?
Both.
Good answer. Y'all pause like
that. Huh? Both. Oh, Popeye sandwich or Chick-fil-A sandwich?
Chick-fil-A. He'll say Popeye.
I never even had the Popeye, so I'm going to say Chick-fil-A.
You better go get it now.
Okay.
Next one. Queenstown, New Zealand or Kingston, Jamaica?
Hey, boop, boop. Kingston, of course.
Easy. And that was actually written before I knew you were from Jamaica.
Drake or Soulja Boy? Drake or Soulja Boy?
Drake. Drake. Drake,
for sure.
Staycation or vacation?
Vacation.
Texas football or Louisiana football?
Louisiana all day.
Oh my God. Now, canceled. Canceled.
You say you're from AME. Mike, bro, come on, you can't do that.
I grew up in Texas, though, and I've seen both football.
But, and you know, it's not the same. It's not the same.
Georgia.
No. Texas.
Georgia.
That's middle school football.
That hurts. That hurts, man.
No. With all due disrespect.
There you go. That was nice.
iPhone or Android?
iPhone.
Curls or squats?
Squats. Jerk chicken or oxtail?
Oxtail.
Hey.
I'm still laughing at the both, though. Morning sex or night sex? Both.
I'm about to say, if you got a C answer, I'd take that one, too. A, B, and C.
I want to thank both of you guys. We want to give a special thanks to DeJuan's arms. I know it took a lot to get them through the door. And I want to thank you guys, though, for coming on with us and being real honest.
Yes, thank you for sharing your wisdom, your advice. And I love your story of how you guys met and how you guys are keep going strong as a family.
I'm going to tell my wife, I want both, morning and night.
All the time.
And lunch.
Make sure.
All right. Thank you, guys.
Thank y'all for having us. We loved it. We enjoyed it.
Yeah, we really enjoyed it.
I appreciate you guys. All right, everybody. It's that time of the week where we kind of, have our little pro tip and Pele does her little thing. Sometimes we respectfully disagree on certain things, but at the same time, we still love each other. The pro tip of the week. We just finished with our guests and we were talking about the conversation about money. What is the greatest way to have a conversation with your family about money without being rude and explaining to them that your money is your money and it's not their money? My pro tip is just to be completely honest with them. I think it's really hard as a family member to come into some type of money and not expect for other people to feel like they should have access to that money. So at that point, you need to be able to have a conversation like, there's some things that I'm willing to pay for because it's out of my own grace, not because you need it. Because sometimes I feel like as an individual, you become a crutch for your family. And, if your lights are getting cut off, that's a whole nother story. But if you're like, I want to go to a vacation, I want to do all that stuff, I feel like that's a whole nother conversation. But I feel like if your family member is taking all the steps to be successful and you want to help them out, that's on you. But I don't feel like you should be a crutch for your family.
I feel like also when you're in a marriage and you both have to make decisions on money, sometimes the person on the other end can see the bigger picture through what's going on in the situation. So you're able to carefully make a better decision that will benefit not only your spouse, but your family, and also where that doesn't come straining the relationship of the family member that's needing something. But I think sometimes it's a little selfish when someone does ask for something. You're asking about me, and also I need it now. Sometimes when you're asked for money, it's, there's something that's going to happen eventually in 3 months that I'll need this, or I'll be able to pay you back. It's always a right now. Like, I need X amount, but I need it right now. And then if you don't, then you're also ridiculed because you're like, you have so much and you don't want to give.
And that's the thing, too, because it's like an immediate action. And when you're like, I need you to, I can't use Venmo. I can't use Cash App. I can't use QuickBooks. I need you to go to Walmart and wire the money. I'm like, people don't wire money no more from Walmart.
But that's where the selfish comes in, is that they don't understand that we're having our everyday lives, whether it's work, family, just other stuff that we're doing, that we have to drop everything because they're having a crisis.
And so the pro tip really this week is not to feel guilty. about when people ask you for money and you just cannot do it. If you can't do it, just do what's within your means. Don't feel guilty or don't feel shame because you can't help the people the way that you want to help them or they're asking for too much. Just do what you can and continuously moving. Like, because we, like Pele said, sometimes people ask for things that they don't even really need. They just know you got it, so they don't want to have to work for it. In the words of Lauryn Hill, everybody want to go until you tell them about the price that you paid to get where you're going. I'm done. Thank you, Lauryn Hill.
That's it.
That's my part.
No, that's my part.
Which one of us is supposed to say come back next week?
Please come back next week.
That's it,
guys.
Pele, that's my part. I'm supposed to say that.
That's it, guys. Don't worry about Michael. Please come back next week for another episode of
Mouthpiece.
There you go, Michael.
But that's your part.
And Pele Bennett.
On next week's episode, we're joined by the great John Carlos. Did you hear me? The great John Carlos. He's probably most famous for raising his fist high above his head as he stood at that podium in the 1968 Olympics in a powerful show of solidarity with the Black Panther movement. People, it is John Carlos. Make sure you tune in. I don't care where you at. Make sure you tune in. Please subscribe to us or like us on anything that you're listening to. Apple, Stitcher, Spotify, whatever you're listening to get away from your family, whoever you don't want to be around. And make sure you rate us or give us a comment. Even though we don't give a fuck about your comments, give us a comment. Mouthpiece is a production of Lemonada Media, which you can find online on all social platforms at Lemonada Media. You can follow me on social media at MosesBread72. I love bread, and biblically, I always thought I was Moses.
And you can follow me on Instagram at Pele Pels. Mouthpiece with Michael and Pele Bennett is executive produced by us, the Bennetts. Our Lemonada Media executive producer is Eli Kramer, and our producer is Genevieve Garrity. Our assistant producer is Claire Jones, and our audio is edited by Brian Castillo. Thank you to our ad sales and distribution partners at Westwood One, and to all of our sponsors for making this show possible.
Thank you for listening. We'll be back. We'll be back next week. We'll be back, back. Make sure you tune in.
Lemonada. Do you ever get hit with a cringy memory of your 13-year-old self out of nowhere, and suddenly you're panic sweating and laughing at the same time? Don't worry. We all get that. It's because being an adolescent is one of the most visceral shared experiences we have as people, and we want to talk about it. Join me, Penn Badgley, and my two friends, Nava and Sophie, on Podcrushed as we interview celebrity guests about the joys and horrors of being a teenager and how those moments made them who they are today. New episodes of Podcrushed are out on April 24th, wherever you get your podcasts.